10:30. So I think let's actually take this up. I have actually circulated an agenda. I'm sure it's actually before you honorable member. We do actually have our guests here. All of them will actually get to that. But in the opening, I think we would just note that we are at load shedding. We will actually proceed there. The secretariat is actually managing their space quite okay, even without electricity, shouldn't be a big problem. We'll pick up on the apologies, just to check what we have got here, tender. We'll actually ask that we speak to apologies in terms of attendance
morning
of today's meeting.
Members, we only have Mr. McPherson on party business as an apology.
There's only one apology which we've got from the member side. Let's actually then welcome all the members that are here. Let's actually look at the next item. We will be taking the DTI and National Treasury measures to ensure compliance with local content requirements and verification thereof as the first item. We'll actually then have a presentation and I was hoping that we can be able to actually get then comments and questions for clarity immediately after that presentation. It seems there are two presentations linked to that, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure it can be confirmed. Is this one around the local policy and designation?
Local control.
This is a treasure. Yeah, but it will be done together. Yeah. We will do both. There's one with National Treasury and the department. It's one presentation, which is the one that we're actually just speaking to now. I think we will take both and then have a discussion. As listed in the program, the next one, there will be a tea break. It might be ready by then. And then we'll actually move to the next one, which is the ITEC presentation, which will actually be the one we actually pick up. And then after that, we will then take questions for clarity and comments. So there's actually also the committee business part, which is the minutes. Minutes are circulated from members. We will actually have a look at that so that we can be able to actually adopt, amend, with amendments or without amendments. So then we'll actually conclude. We hope to finish around 1. Can I just put that before you, honorable members, and then just if you're comfortable for us to proceed in that way. There's no power, so
no.
You are going to use your voices today.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning. I move for adoption of the agenda.
Okay, Kabat.
Chair, I just want to ask a question. I believe there's no water in the building there for just electricity.
Well, in some cases, you know, if you in the valve, what we had is that without electricity, you can't pump water. So I'm not sure if ever there are any parts of the parliament which actually are affected. But we do have some water in some bottles. We'll check if ever that they can be actually brought in. So, but water and electricity, honourable member, does have a connection. There's a big issue which we actually got exposed to in the valve. When electricity goes, there's no water, there's no electricity. So I'm not sure of this space, but we'll have a look at that. I thought you were seconding, Mark Campbell. Okay. For me, thank you very much. Can we then, I'm sure there's no objection. Can we then proceed on the agenda? We do actually have our team here. I think we would actually be requesting DDG Pele. I'm sure you'll be the one who's actually introducing yourself and the team to be able to actually pick up off our first presentation. I thought it would be maybe helpful just to give a sense of a briefing relating to the DTI and National Treasury. I've tried to actually just make a sense that the purpose of this presentation is to engage in the implementation and consideration of compliance of government departments and entities with minimum local content threshold set in relation to the designated goods and services. Local public procurement has been identified as a means to increase the demand for domestic produced goods. The Minister of Trade and Industry, in conjunction with Minister of Finance, is tasked to identify products and services that can be designated. These designated products must comply with the determined minimum threshold of local content when purchased by government. The final point is just to say, as there has been appeared to be a lack of compliance across governments and entities, which ineffective enforcement to curtail non-compliance, there is thus need to determine whether appropriate measures have been implemented and or are being considered to be addressed. So I think we're actually asking this presentation on the basis of that understanding on our side. We thought it would be important just to raise it so that our expectations sort of met, and I'm sure in the presentation there may be something we can pick up on. Okay. Before the presentation, the DDG will introduce the team as well. Cuthbert, you wanted to raise something?
Yes, DJ. Chair, just a housekeeping issue. In terms of the meeting being recorded, how are we doing that? Because obviously the mics are not working. So
No. They're doing quite well. They've got some small gadgets, but I think because there are few of our admin support, they'll actually have to make sure that we do have a record of this meeting, properly captured. But I'm actually quite happy that at least you're concerned about how the administration is. But I said to them they must be smart and actually adjust to the environment, because if they don't, we might end up in trouble. DDG, floor is yours. We can actually proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Let me start off by introducing myself. My name is Candy Pele. I'm currently the acting DDG of the Industrial Development Division within the ETI. We are responsible for sector strategy implementation and development. For today's discussion, as the Chair has already indicated, it's because of the work that we have been rolling out in relation to the designation, compliance to the local content, as prescribed by the various circulars under the PPPFA preferential procurement regulations. It's a function that we are co-sharing between ourselves, the DTI, the National Treasury, as the custodian of the procurement legislation, and the Bureau of Standards as an entity that has been appointed to undertake the local content verification exercises. With me today on the table is Dr. Teboho Makube, who is going to take us through the presentation from the DTI side. He's the Chief Director responsible for local content implementation and policy development within the department. The other colleague is Catherine Matiza from the same unit. She's the Director responsible for also local content implementation. We've got two colleagues from SEP, Ms. Jodie Scales, who is currently the co-administrator in SEP. As the members would know her, she is a group CEO from the DTI, but today she's here as in her capacity as a co-administrator of that. And Mr. Katima Temba, he is the manager responsible for the local content verification exercises. And Zombie, our acting group CEO. Because today SEPS is here, she's also overseeing the entity, providing entity oversight within the department. I don't see the colleagues from National Treasury. I am hopeful that they will join as the meeting proceeds.
Okay. So you always just try and up your voice. You've done quite well, DDG. So as we proceed, we actually just keep those voices out there. Don't be feel part of the committee already, because she's quite often here. So sometimes even if she's not introduced, we think, oh, she's part of the team. Okay, DDG, proceed.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, members. So the presentation will cover four broad areas. First is the regulatory framework. And the process which we follow when we designate a product as the DPI. The work that we are doing to monitor tenders for compliance. So I will cover the role of the South Africa of South Africa in supporting localization, and then move over to the role of the South African Bureau of Standards when it comes to local content verification, and lastly, just to give an alert on some of the impact in terms of investments and the support that we give to companies to manufacture and supply designated products. And finally, I will then cover the work that we are doing and moving forward in the enhancement of compliance to this policy. So as an introduction, local content is one of industrial policy instruments that the government is using to support economic growth in the country. It's a public policy instrument, and when you look at it, don't look at it in isolation from other instruments that are being used by government to support industrial development in the country. Now, with this policy, I'm now moving to slide number 3, is that this is the legislative framework. Right? It's part of the preferential procurement regulation. Right? So you find local content under Regulation 8. So Regulation 8 of the 2017 preferential procurement regulation deals with local production and content. Now moving back, we government started implementing this policy on the 7th of December in 2011. Right. So the first regulations were in 2011, and they were amended to the 2017 regulation. So now under Regulation 8.1, the DTI has powers to designate sectors for local production. So the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition now has powers to designate, and those powers are derived from Regulation 8.1. Now Regulation 8.2 is very clear that organs of state must include local content in their invitation of tenders of bids. So meaning that once a product is designated for local production, it is a requirement for organs of state to include that condition in the invitation of bids. It's not the opinion of the DTI, it's what the law requires. And then 8.3, it gives power to the National Treasury to circulate instruction notes or stroke circular. 8.4 deals with the self-designation. Government, as you know, will not designate the whole economy. There are many products which are still being procured without designation or without local content requirement. So Regulation 8.4 provides an opportunity to the organs of state to themselves designate products. Regulation 8.5 is very clear that if bids do not meet the local content requirements, those bids should not be considered for fair in terms of evaluation. So local content is law, and I must emphasize that any law, it becomes South African law, not the DTI's law. So I must make it clear, it's government, just like BEE, it's government requirement. When you do business with government, you must comply to the BEE laws of the country, not the DGI BEE. Same requirement and interpretation here is that local content is the requirement in terms of the law. Now I'm moving over to slide number 4, dealing with the remedies for local content. And I'll also give a context in terms of what's the role of the CTR. So when we started in 2011, the regulations were not clear as to how to deal with remedies for local content. And we then made an input in the amendment that for 2017 regulation, regulation 14 subsection 1 is now having a condition that the organ of state must, upon detecting that the tenderer has submitted a bid that does not comply with triple B and local content, then it provides that, you know, the bidder must be given an opportunity to make a representation, and that the National Treasury will then be the final arbiter in terms of the decision that can be made, mainly to disbar the bidder from participating further in the act. The DTI, as you can see, is not given the oath. Our role is only in Regulation 8.1 to designate. In terms of the enforcement of the non-compliance, the role of the DTI is not defined, and that is a grey area because it creates problems. We don't have power to cancel tenders as the DTI, special tenders which do not comply. And also, if you interpret this regulation, you see that it's more process laden. It says this must be done, doesn't really specify the instruments that can be implemented where there is non-compliance. For example, if tenders can be cancelled, if it can be punitive measures, those are not clear in any of the regulations. And we are saying it's an area that needs to be tightened up moving forward, because this is a challenging area. So slide number 5 deals with the process that we follow. Basically, this is it's not only a legal instrument designation, but it's we are trying to resolve, as I said, an economic problem of slow economic growth, of negative trade balance in some of the sectors. So in line with other economic policy instruments, designation tries to leverage government expenditure to support industrialization. So government expenditure is very critical. It's about 22% of the GDP. So if you strip out what is spent on goods and services, you see that it's about 14 to 15% is what government spends on goods and services, and that is procurement. So it's not only about buying of goods and services, we just have to be strategic as to how do we buy those goods and services. So there is a process that we follow. We look at the sectors. We also participate, we implement this through the framework of international trade law. We are members of the WTO. There are certain rules that we must follow. This is applicable in government expenditure. So the private sector is not compelled by law to buy local. So, but there are engagements at NetNet. So we look at the sectors. Government must buy the product. And most sectors that we support through this process is that they are facing some import leakages. Even where we can manufacture as government, as a country, the appetite to buy imported products is very high. So there is a committee within the DTI. We look at the feasibility, and then we recommend to the minister for designation, and if that is approved, we ask the National Treasury to issue out instruction notes. So since I'm now on page slide number 6, since 2012-13, so the regulation came into effect on the 7th of December 2011, so there was a time lapse. The first instruction notes were issued out by the National Treasury in July 2012. So this slide shows that we then issued instruction notes in 2012-13, and up to date we have 27 products which we have designated over 18, from rolling stock, as you know, Prasa, Transnet, they are renewing their fleet, so we are leveraging that expenditure to support local manufacturers, including textile products and furniture. So slide number 7 provides the same list, but what is important there is to look at the second column, which gives the threshold. So anything less than 100%, okay, so at 100% minimum local content, it means we don't allow import, ideally. So everything must be manufactured in South Africa. Less than 100%, it means certain materials or components can be imported so that local manufacturing can happen in the country. So the last column there, it provides the date in which the instruction notes were issued. The only sector that doesn't have minimum thresholds, or no, instruction notes issued by the National Treasury, is the pharmaceutical sector, where government has agreed that because of security of supply, the intellectual property rights in terms of some of the medicines, we will then designate a tender. So the ARV tenders, the oral solid dosage tenders, those we meet with the National Treasury and the Department of Health to agree on the minimum thresholds per tender. So what is also key for members to understand is that local content is applied on the product, not on the company per se. It is the product itself, and the DTI, we confine ourselves to the product. We're not necessarily involved in the design of the tender. We know that there are many methods to procure products, but once a product is designated for local production, that must be applied. I'll jump slide number 9 and move straight to 10, dealing with areas of non-compliance. So this is a very complex area, members. You can't draw a straight line and say compliance, that's there are challenges happening within the regulated environment, so meaning when the organs of state start advertising and evaluating and awarding. So that we have focused our attention over years. In the past, departments will just advertise without specifying. And that is against Regulation 8.2. So we are intervening, and I'm happy to say on average about 80% to 90% in terms of compliance, which has improved over there. So there's no challenge in there. We have put in systems to monitor that. But there are other areas besides the advertising. Yeah. And some of the challenges regarding non-compliance are purely procurement-related challenges. And the issue of corruption, the issue of collusion between organs of state and suppliers, some of the bidders fraudulently inflate the local content requirements in order to increase their chances of getting tenders. And the other area is around the Kenki project, the design, build, operate and transfer kind of projects, where government departments will then outsource the whole project delivered from to technical advisors. And those technical advisors do not sometimes include local content requirements. And the other part, what we have found out, is that if local content requirements are not a condition at the design stage, it's difficult to then insist on the local content requirements throughout the life cycle process, especially at the maintenance, because the design is very key. You know, some projects are designed so that local content is not applied throughout. So even at the maintenance stage, we are losing out because what is being designed does not align with the specifications and the our capacity in the country. So we have, slide number 11 shows that we have put in measures to deal with local content. We work with the industry associations and unions. They are interested in this because it is their companies, their members who are losing jobs, who are losing contracts. So they have an interest to monitor this. I've spoken about the specifications, some of the tenders. The government is now working on the master plan. And my introduction that you must not look at this policy in isolation from other support measures that we are putting in place. So there is furniture master plan. So furniture is designated, so there's also going to be the master plan, you know, because it's not only government that is buying furniture. Business, households, and so forth. So support measures are required. Same as steel, sugar, poultry, and other products which are designated. And also the job summit commitments, we work with the presidency to monitor government commitments to those broader agreements of the job summit, including the commitment by business. I will cover the role of Priority South Africa. We also work with the Auditor General to scale up the auditing of designated products. And that's what is very critical in terms of ensuring compliance. And we are making a point here around the expanded powers of the AG's office in terms of the Public Audit Act, particularly in making it liable for government officials who do not comply with the regulations to be held personally liable in terms of the cost incurred. And also working with the National Treasury on compliance and issuing out other instruction notes. So I'm moving over to the role of Priority South Africa. Shortly, is that we have the that is slide number 14. I'm jumping slide 13, but we have instituted the tender monitoring system at the Priority South Africa, which monitors the tenders overnight. So that system is linked to 763 websites. So all adverts which are then posted there, then the system will be able to check designated products. And if then there is non-compliance, the DCI is being asked to intervene. We do that by asking Organizational stage to either retract the tenders or amend. So that is it's very helpful. But also, Priority South Africa is having public sector procurement forums where the DTI gets invited. This is part of kind of awareness on this program. We is around the country where we ask and train procurement officials to implement this policy. Part of this tender monitoring system is that there is a value addition where there are opportunities, then Priority South Africa informs its members of the opportunities to manufacture and supply the products to the government. Moving over to the local content verification by the Bureau of Standards, this is and I want members to, you know, apply their minds on this matter. It's a gray area, the issue of local content verification around the funding, who funds it, is not clarified in the legislation. So as the DTI, we have come in to, and we made available 22 million to fund this function. Bidders are refusing to pay for this function because they are saying there is no requirement on their part to pay. And it's true because the legislation and the regulation themselves do not address this particular matter. So we do provide progress in terms of what the Bureau of Standards has done with the amount that we have given to them. And the following slide provides much more information. But the issue that I want to emphasize is that moving forward, we must also look at other non-tariff methods of verification, because the scale of tenders that are being issued, the scale is very high. We deal with tenders that are worth billions, and whether we'll have the fiscal capacity to deal with each and every tender, I doubt. So that is why we must consider other methods of asking bidders to declare what is truthful and be, that they be held accountable for that, whether through criminal methods or other ways. But you must find a way of not only dealing with this matter through the fiscal method. So on slide 17, we provide an update as to what has been awarded to South African manufacturing. So we can see there that it's slightly above 76 billion rand, which we have been able to save, because this money could have been externalized and support foreign companies. And my view is that is not a true reflection of what we are doing, because not all government departments are complying in terms of reporting. And that does not necessarily mean that they are not implementing local content. They might be implementing but not sending the reports to the DTR. So these figures are derived from the signed bidding documents of tenders being awarded to bidders. So we do this kind of an analysis. The slide 18 is a plan of what the Bureau of Standards is doing in terms of the sectors for verification. So 22 million is not much to deal with tenders worth billions. So we have said to them they must prioritize the tenders based on the value or the volume. So they've given us the list. Slide 19, the challenges. As I said, there is the manipulation of the bid price to meet local content requirements. So a typical example, if bidders supply a bid for to supply uniforms, the minimum threshold there is 100%. So meaning we don't allow imports. So the flip side of it is that if you bid at less than 100%, your bid won't be considered. So there is a perverse incentive by some to then always try to meet the threshold. Right? So that is part the challenge that we are facing. The other part is that bidders will submit all what is required in terms of the law, and organs of state will then adjudicate. But what happens after the adjudication and the signing of contract is different, because companies are saying there are no orders, they don't see orders coming through, meaning that people submit documents but they still import the product. So that's another area we've identified for focus moving forward. I've covered the issue of funding. The other part is anti-competitive behavior by manufacturers, because they give inflated prices to non-manufacturing bidders. So it's an area which we in our engagement with the Competition Commission, we said we must look at. I'm on slide 21 now, just to give a background in terms of what is the impact. So this slide provides the support we have given to the transportation sector. Remember, the transport equipment is a problem in this country. part of our trade deficit is because we are importing a lot of transport equipment. Because of the problems we assemble cars in the country, we have to import components. The rail, we have previously come to this committee and provided data that some of the state-owned companies still import rail. So local content together with other support measures is then trying to limit the impact of that. So you'll see that we have local content applicable in rail for coaches, for locomotives, for wagons and automotives. We have designated buses, fire trucks. We are now in the process of including yellow metal equipment. In the marine, we have designated vessels being used by the Navy. In the aerospace, we do have another procurement lever called the National Industrial Participation Program, where we support the South African companies to supply components to Airbus and Boeing. In the slide 22, the steel industry, besides the master plans, there are commitments by state-owned companies, both water-related SOEs as well as rail rolling stock, to support the procurement, or through procurement, the steel manufacturers, both upstream and downstream. So there are commitments, and that is why you'll see that there will be a resuscitation of other high-tech steel, particularly through Transnet Engineering project. Slide 23 is about other sectors, especially the pharmaceuticals, the vaccines. As I said, we don't have upfront instruction notes in this sector, but there is. We are engaging with the Department of Health in providing opportunities for South African companies in medical devices. And those are listed there. And lastly, in this area is around transformers. As you know, that Eskom and municipalities, it's unfortunate now that we don't have electricity, but you know, we need transformers moving forward in the supply of electricity. So the contracts are being awarded, and South African companies are being given opportunities to manufacture and supply transformers. So companies like Wildlife has been given that opportunity, and it's ramping up its investment and creating job opportunities. And lastly, in terms of the way forward, the DPI continues to make money available to the South African Bureau of Standards. We have made 20 million available over the medium term for local content verification. We are working on, you know, applying our minds to look at non-fiscal alternatives in terms of local content verification. We are also working with the AG to make sure that we audit the local content reporting process, because that's key for us to, when we come here, to report to you whether the policy is working. We need the data. So if we don't get that, we will not be able to be held accountable whether this policy is working or not. We are saying moving forward, there must be closer working relationship, not only between us and the National Treasury, but other organs of state, the Bureau of Standards, Receiver of Revenue, ITAC, including law enforcement agencies. But some of the challenges that we deal with are not only procurement related, but they are criminal in nature. So that working relationship is So our view, lastly, is that the public procurement bill provides an opportunity for us to augment some of the policies that we have to deal with the challenges that we are currently having, and that we must use public procurement generally as an instrument to support transformation, economic and industrial development. Thank you.
We would actually then move straight to the presentation by National Treasury. We've seen the team coming in. Maybe you can introduce yourselves first, then you can take us through the presentation. Everything has been slowed down because of load shedding, and welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Committee members. Apologies for being late. As you said, we were actually in the building, but we were locked in somehow. I think somehow our colleagues forgot that we were there because of the darkness, so we were somewhat trapped, but we are here now, and thank you for your indulgence. My name is Leanna Peterson. I'm from the FCM Policy and Legal Unit within the National Treasury, in the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. And my colleague is Kizi Kolofe, which is also from our OCCO office in the FCM Government Monitoring and Compliance Unit. So thank you for coming out. I think I wouldn't really want to necessarily repeat anything that Dr. Mokube has said, but maybe just as a thing that's always important, just as by way of background, for us to all sort of be on the same page. So the focus, I think, that we sort of took was essentially to look at the legal mandate that we do have when it comes to local production and content, but then also to look at the different role plays in that space. So and I think procurement, by and large, has quite a high standing in that defined expression in the Constitution itself, first and foremost. So, and I think we all know Section 217 that essentially provides procurement principles to guide all processes that relate to public procurement. And in 217, 2 and 3, we find it also talks then about certain leveling of the playing field, and this is how the triple PSA then was introduced, and its regulations which called to then do that. But going forward, I think in Regulation 9 of the 2011 regulations and now Regulation 8 in the 2017 regulations, we see then how the issue of local production and content has been found expression there. And I think Dr. Mokube has basically taken you through that quite extensively. But essentially what I just want to say is that there you see already it fosters the ground for a working together National Treasury and the DCI in that even when designation happens, so the DCI would be the one to identify and do the research, but in consultation with National Treasury, there is this whole process there of where we would also look at that and look at economic factors and how they might potentially impact on the designation, such as job losses, job creation, competition factors, and so on. Once that is eventually ironed out between ourselves, then the National Treasury, by virtue of Regulation A3, then has to inform the organs of state and the industry basically that there have been these particular products that have been designated. And so in 2011, there were instruction notes. In 2017, it's by way of circulars, which don't minimize the impact or the effect of the designation. It's just that in terms of the preferential procurement regulations, unlike the PFMA, the Act doesn't make provision for instruction notes to be issued. Hence, it's now circulars going forward. But since the onset of the regulations in 2011, through part 2017, as I can see, there have been numerous instructions / circulars that have been issued in this regard. But what we will see then is that when it comes to the compliance now thereof, the current circulars and the instructions on the designated sector that are on slide 4 require the accounting officers and accounting authorities to provide information to the DCI. And the following information is required. They need to, after they've issued a tender, and they then receive the closes, they then receive those bids, they need to then, and they've chosen a successful supplier and so on, they need to provide copies of the contract to the DTI. They need to then provide standard billing documents, your MDBs and your FDBs 6.2, together with certificates and your annex receipts and so on. So all of that, by virtue of what is contained in the instruction and the circular, has to then be submitted to the DTI, and they would then look at conducting these compliance audits and so on, with a view to monitoring the implementation and so on of the industrial development strategy. Furthermore, where there are challenges that suppliers experience in terms of buying locally and procuring those local products and so on, local countries, they require them to approach the DPI in order for the DPI to give them what is commonly termed an exemption. So they would then relax those requirements and based on once they've verified certain information. So I think the DPI is doing a sterling job in terms of that. But obviously there are also some challenges as well. But from a national treaty as a policy making institution, I think to a large extent the role then in the designation is about facilitating and being part of the development and administration of public procurement treaties. And then also Regulation 14 talks about certain varieties that national treaty together with the accounting offices may employ. So but what it says is unfortunately the remedies provision there is not one that is and I think it does need to be augmented in that if you look at Regulation 14 of the Preferential Procurement Regulation, as they currently stand, they talk about where false information was submitted with regard to local content. So it doesn't necessarily talk to the fact that where bidders or where institutions have maybe failed to advertise a tender with that. So the emphasis is on false information relating to BE, false information relating to local production and content. And then, again, it's up to the organs of state to either then cancel that tender where they discover that, or to cancel the contract if they've already awarded that contract. So we can see then that there's still room. And then it goes on to say, so the national treasury role is after the organ of state then interacts with the bidders to say, okay, look, based on this false information that you've given, we might even want to go further and restrict you from doing business with government. And it's at that point where they will then apply what termed the RDR from parking rule, where they will give the organ of the bidder an opportunity to state their case, and then that information, based on what they receive, they will make a proposal to Treasury to say, based on everything, we think this bidder should be restricted, for example, for a period of 3 years or 5 years and so on, but not more than 10 years. National Treasury's role then at that point is to have a look at that information and knowing, in light of maybe other cases and the standards that have been applied previously will then say, okay, in terms of that, and based on the information we receive, that sanction seems a bit too harsh or too lenient. And it's at that point where then the National Treasury's role comes in. So and like I said, it's really limited, but the good news, I think, is that because the Public Procurement Bill has now been promulgated or presented for public comment on the 19th of February, it's now an opportunity for organizations as well as role players in this space, whether it's the bidder or any other verification agency or even members around this table, to then submit comments so that indeed such provisions may be augmented and we can see how do we tighten that up from a policy perspective. But it will still require, because it's a government policy, it will still require that all the role players to still play their part. So essentially, for example, like I said, it's National Treasury, the DPI is also playing a role, a big role, because obviously they're the custodians of this policy, and those government policies. But And then the accounting officers and accounting authorities are the ones then who have to make sure that when they are advertising with this, they do advertise with those requirements. And I think the nice thing is that because bidders themselves are aware now, more and more increasingly aware of these provisions, when institutions don't do that, they are also taken to court. And so we find that the courts are also playing a role in terms of them, and sometimes their tenders are even overturned. And I think we as well that we can now play the role. So, and then the bidders themselves have a role to play in that they need to comply with those instructions and the circulars. But then in terms of, I think what we're trying to say from outside is that yes, on the one hand, Treasury has the role to provide those policy instruments and legislative requirements, but notwithstanding that, even though the policy instruments are there, and we still want to augment them, like in terms of the public procurement goal, but we are also, National Treasury is also in the process of developing a reporting framework for the purposes of gleaning information from organs of state. But at the moment, there isn't that sort of single reporting requirement. So institutions report on different things, but they don't necessarily, there isn't sort of a space for them to report on compliance with the regulations, whether it's on BEE compliance or local production of content and so on, or even the development of small and medium enterprises. So that holistic sort of reporting framework is in the process of being developed. We've gone quite a long way, I think, to that. Our aim was to actually have something by the 1st of April, but it looks like there's been some challenges with that. But hopefully, until later on in the year, that can be developed and be implemented. And so that at least there'll be some kind of portal where, at a single glance, we'll be able to see, okay, these were the tenders that were advertised that were linked to local production and content, and this was the level of response, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then also our SCMGMT unit does support the DPI when, but this is more really when that has been reported to them. So there isn't a specific focus mechanism at this point in time to say, okay, let's look specifically at all these tenders that were issued that are in the designated sector space. But when it's been reported either by a bidder or by another institution or the DPI, then our GMC unit will review those specific tenders where local content requirements are not complied with, and then issue the relevant remedies. So I think, for the sake of time, I think Dr. McCoy has already indicated how many designated sectors circulars and instructions have been issued, but really just in this financial year there were about 11, but including some revisions to previous ones that were issued. So I think there is a good working relationship that has been fostered between ourselves and the DPI, but because of the government policy, other people or everybody needs to do more, and the issue regarding the verification still needs to be finally ironed out to be better. But I think it's so in a nutshell, that's just, I think, to give the committee a sense of an overview of what our mandate is as provided for in legislation, but also to say that in terms of the bill, it can be augmented so that we can at least address some of the challenges that we are experiencing now. Thank you.
Okay. So generally what we will try and do is that we would actually then ask the committee members to speak. I'll ask that we do the first presentation in the DTI and ask members to actually then maybe comment. If there are any comments, questions for clarity, we take that one first and then we'll proceed to the next one. They are aligned, the issues actually. It may be one issue, but with two presentations. Let me note hence, Simulda, Yako, Mantasha, Buyan, and Modise, Mutau, sorry. I'm improving here now. The Modise. Speaker's not here. Okay. Can we actually take it that Mulder?
Thank you, Chair. My question relates to slide number 16 and 17 where the disability is mentioned.
Sorry, can press now?
Oh, so we're back to press and see if it's...
Okay,
it's not working out.
Yeah, I'm coming back.
Which document is
it? As far as the SAB is concerned, all that the SAB...
Okay, we can try and press and I think it can go on. Okay, then switch off that one. Okay, switch off that one.
As far as the SAB is concerned and the role that they play, it's been mentioned that SAB's local content division has been able to conduct 55 verification and this is more than 374 tire and 2-3 supplies in the process. That's 55 out of how many? That's the question that I've got. I see there's some percentages mentioned later on out of all the tenders reported since implementation. So before certain value tenders have been verified. The number of tenders verified is however very low, reported to be less than 10%. And my question is simply, we visited the SABS, we are quite aware of the situation there, and this actually stipulates how important it is to get the SABS to function properly, and how are we going to fund this? I think we should really address the situation. I know it's maybe the delegation could elaborate on funding. What would be the ideal situation? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine are just comments and a few questions. I think what the presenters are trying to say is that there is a loophole in the policy and the framework around compliance and non-compliance. So I think we need to look seriously as a committee as to how we're going to address that in terms of amending it in a way that ensures that the fact that we have to have local content and the enforcement of local content in South Africa is quite important in order to strengthen the economy. So that's something maybe we need to look at as a committee, that what are we going to do with regard to that as a matter of urgency. And secondly, I do want to reiterate Honourable Mulder on what he said on the ACBS. The ACBS is quite dysfunctional on its own, and I know we've been told that administratively it's working, but to us, when we went there, it doesn't seem like the structure was functioning very well. It doesn't have the capacity to even deal with what it has on its own day. So how much more now with all these other duties that it has to do in terms of verifying? So it's a big worry to have an entity of the state that's also then not having the capacity to assist, as important as it is. Thirdly, the private sector, is there any way that we can have incentives? I know you said that private sector does not have any obligation to have locally made products, but is there any incentive that we can give to them, tax incentives, whatever kind of incentives, to make sure that it's also involved as far as prioritizing locally made content and products? Lastly, are there any loopholes that state organs overlook in terms of the restriction of tenders and locally made products? Because I know that some bidders, they bid and they say, here's what we do and here's the products that we have, but then they sublet. So how are you making sure that the subletters or subcontractors are actually having the local content, are actually producing, using 100% South African made goods. That's all from me, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Montasha.
Thank you, Chairperson, for going. It's a bit disturbing, Chairperson, that this policy has been there since 2012. It's now 2020, but it is still not working perfectly for us. to ensure that we verify and we compel state organs to adhere to it. And really it calls for amendments. You were talking about a bill, which I think, Doc, you can explain to us what does that bill do, where at every stage of it, because definitely there's a gap that needs to be filled. Also, at a point where you said beyond a tender that has been issued, and those who apply for the tenders, in the book they say they look as if they will comply, but beyond that we have no regulation that says when the tender has been issued already, what happens? Do they comply with the local content policy? We can't evaluate them beyond that. What are we going to do with it? How are we going to curb that problem? Because for us, this is an industrial policy tool. And if it doesn't work for us for 8 years, I think it's too long a time for us not to have noticed that there's a gap. And if there's a bill that is in place or that it is in a process, it must be fed up. I'll stop there for now, Chair.
Okay. William?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning. I've got two clarities to do questions. Chair, one is the role that is played by the National Treasurer in terms of non-compliance, whether we can be clarified as to what is that is doing besides the secular. Because they are telling us of secular. Besides the secular, what is it that they're doing to enforce? Because our understanding is that funds, all departments and SOC and SOEs are funded by the National Treasury. So can they be able to verify whether this one has been able to deal with the local content? And also the issue of power to terminate in terms of the remedy. Who lies with this power? Can we be clarified as well? We really understand that they are designated products for local production. But you are not so sure in terms of whether the wheel beam and the steel products for construction are manufactured in South Africa. Because there's 100% local. So who can be able to clarify those issues? Because we can see also the steel and tariff applied by ITEC and so forth. So my question was just to check as to who's dealing with the matter of verifying the 100% local content. Maybe the last one, Chair, would be in terms of the DTI conducting a compliance audit. It was part of the remedy. The DTI has to conduct compliance audit with a view to monitor the implementation of the law. And also, where we can see, they say that the department with the working relation which represents the SOE, I don't know whether they're here, the Department of Public Enterprise, whether they're here, and how do they monitor SOE, because they only have 3 SOE, and themselves as well, they need to be monitored. And also, I think we must be able to identify ourselves as parliamentarians to say, in terms of this regulation, the public procurement policy is meant strategically a rule for economic development and also transformation. But then if you fail to monitor and implement the simple PSA, seemingly we are failing to do our job. Because part of our task and strategies like the industrial development and also the national treasure is to see that we transform the economy and also we develop the small business. So I just wanted to check where are we in terms of that, because from the 2012 still we were trying to manage contradictions in terms of compliance. So can we be able to clarify that to what are we doing exactly? And what is it that as department you want us as a portfolio committee to assist? Because for us is to deal with policies and so forth. Because if there's a gap in the policy, then it means you are not going to make it in terms of this non-compliance kind of arrangement. Chair, maybe last, I can see that there's a brighter moon development, some rules of to govern. The ITO, we are told that you must be governed by the ITO. And our understanding is that we still need to understand the brighter moon. Where does it arise? So that we are able to understand the trade between ourselves and Chairperson, I'm protected.
Yeah.
Because I can see you trying to manage issues.
Yeah. And support you as well.
Yeah. Chair, last but not least, I think the question of SABS, I just wanted to check whether because they were failing even to implement their ICT. How are they going to deal with verification? Because they have challenges even themselves in terms of implementing the computer systems. So they also verify manually and so forth. So I think we need to be clarified on that one as well. To say if they are able to deal with the verification or the role of the RGSA in support of the localization. We were not yet. I don't know whether they do have their education and awareness program in place because we don't see them on the ground dealing with this issue. So that people, even if I can make a practical example, in South Africa, when we sing a national anthem, people, they chow, chappies, they do whatsoever. They're not proud of what they have. They're not proud of their thing. So my understanding is that the proud South African program is to make South African proud. So I'm not so sure that they do have this education and awareness program so that South Africa knows about their pride, knows about what they have, and so forth. I'll leave here for now, Chair. I will
submarine
here for now.
Okay.
I'm
coming.
Mutaung.
Thanks, Chair. I'm partly covered with previous because only one person left to National Treasury. I just want National Treasury to assist us regarding the issue that need to be ironed out regarding the local content. Help us to identify those issues. And what is it that we can assist you as a committee where you have challenges on the implementation of some of the policies? I think that one is also going to be challenged. Thank you, Chair.
Because I was hoping to move to the National Treasury, you've just done well, because we moved, the first part of the presentation was this one. So we actually, can I then, I see Cuthbert, you actually just out. Can I ask you to actually then pick up on this? You can move to National Treasury, I'll take the rest of the other hands as well. If ever there are any questions or comments about National Treasury. The issues are overlapping, they are sort of intertwined as well. So, Cuthbert, you're on the floor. I'll see other hands to be able to actually speak to the next part as well. Cuthbert?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I've just got a couple of questions. The first question is, on what grounds is AMSA considered a local content manufacturer by virtue of the fact that its offices are in fact based in Luxembourg and its owners are of Indian British origin? I don't understand why we treat a foreign company as a local company, and it's still one of the greatest ironies that I've come to see.
Can
you repeat this particular committee?
Which ones are you referring to?
AMSA, particularly in relation to the steel industry. The second question that I have, Chair, is if there's been a cost analysis that's been conducted to compare the production of local goods versus the import of those same goods, because we know that price inflation often tends to take place during local procurement processes, and I just want to know if the effects of that can actually be measured and if we can be provided with the details of that. And then just within the context of the AFCFTA, what are the implications for the current discussions around rules of origin, and how does local content verification fit into the discussions that are currently taking place at the Secretariat level? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let me actually then allow that we can pick up on the treasury part as well. I see Hammers. You can take this. If ever there are any other comments, we'll pick up on that. Can I just say, in response, we would obviously, because there were questions which we thought were referring to the DTI, you might find that there may be comments that actually overlaps, and nothing stops you from actually talking across the issue. The part which we see as very important is your working relationship in dealing with those specific issues. So I think how you respond is quite important, to be able to actually see that we're talking to the same team. Hammond?
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for missing part of the presentation. I was just not able to cope with the heat in the room. Just a very small question. From the presentations, we get the feeling that the remedies are not sufficient to deal with the challenges in terms of non-compliance. So it would be good to hear from, I think it's the question is for the DTI, how can we bridge that gap? What is it that needs to be done? And of course, what must this committee see to so that we maximize localization in all products?
Okay. If ever there are any further comments from the members or questions, which actually looks at the National Treasury's input. And if not, then we can actually then request the DTI and Treasury to actually comment on the issues. The DTI?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. I think on the issues on compliance and enforcement, the point that we are making is that it's going to take a collective state in order for us to actually move to the direction that the policy intended to do. From the legislation perspective, we are indicating that the legislation is clear on the designation process, but the implementation and the enforcement is supposed to happen also at the procuring entity level. Because it's the organs of state that are issuing out the tenders that must ensure that, one, the tenders are compliant with the local content rules. Secondly, once the tender has been awarded, some reporting needs to happen on two levels. One, on some of the technical items, i.e. transformers, rolling stock, and so forth, the procurement entities have got a role to play because they have to go and check the facilities from a quality perspective. So there is a core sharing of responsibilities that we have to do as a collective state in order for us to actually get to the outcomes that we are looking for. Second, the post-award processes, as Dr. Masube was indicating, the circulars are here. Once the procuring entity has awarded a bid, they're supposed to submit the tender documents, or it is the contract, together with an extra fee that outlines how the local content is going to be implemented to the DTI. And it's on the basis of those two documents that we do the verification, and hence the table in slide 16 and 17, where we are indicating the tenders that have been reported to the DTI, or which steps is subsequently doing some verification audits on them. So the issue about reporting is also an issue that we have to also address. Not all procuring entities are reporting. So therefore, the picture that we are giving is not a collective procurement that has happened since the effect of designation, but where we have been able to get a report, or it is the NXS class where SABS has been able to do some audits. I would like my colleagues from SAS to also come in here, but then I need to state the policy intent of us making use of SAS for verification purposes. In 2011-2012, when we were working out the policy framework to implement the designation, SAS was chosen as an institution to assist us with the verification on two fronts. One is a state entity that is called a custodian for quality assessment and accreditation. So therefore, from that perspective, they do have existing capabilities within the organization to carry out accreditation and quality management systems. We wanted to piggyback on the expertise that are already lying in the institution to enable us to do the local content verification. Because generally, a local manufacturer that is already located in South Africa must have some management system or quality management system embedded into their production processes. We have ring-fenced the local content function within SAS as an additional function that SAS is supposed to undertake in joint collaboration with ourselves. However, we too take the note that the committee is raising around the sustainability and the ongoing concern of SAS. And I think for that I will ask Jody to make some additions on that. Without going through the list directly, I think maybe to answer the question that Honorable Pervez is asking around how are we considering AMSA as a local content perspective. As Sebo was indicating, the designation is premised on the local manufacturing activities that are happening locally. AMSA is a local manufacturer of steel products. They do have facilities in South Africa, producing primary steel products, employing South African citizens into their own plants, producing primary product steels that are also feeding into downstream activities. So from a designation perspective, because the local manufacturing or the manufacturing is happening in the vicinities of a South African state, we do consider the products that are being produced by AMSA as products that are meeting the level of local content, because we are judging the manufacturing processes, not necessarily the ownership of the company. And generally it's been the process that we go through across all the designated products. Yes, ownership is important, but the policy intent of local production and local content is to look at where the manufacturing activities are taking place. And if they are taking place in South Africa, there are the capabilities and the capacity that the policy is intending to promote. On issues about, I think maybe getting into the private sector, how do we cajole the private sector to also promote buying local? As Sebo was indicating, that this is a public procurement instrument. The rules can only be applicable to public expenditure. But in the work that we do at the department, for example, in the job summit, the private sector has put commitments on the table to piggyback at the back of which government has already committed to buying local to also bring their spend on the table. Obviously, for some items, for example, pharmaceuticals, the private sector is the biggest procurer of those kind of items. So it's important that we work as a collective to ensure that we are raising the level of aggregate demand as a collective. So we do have platforms where we are engaging with the parties, because we see to what extent some of the items that we have designated can also be preferred by the private sector. But it's only we are pursuing the conversation. It's not a stick, because there is nothing in the legislation, or at least from the rules perspective, that we can force the private sector to actually implement the designation as envisaged from a public sector perspective. Only is on how do we ensure compliance of local content on contractors? They both spoke about the 10 key projects, and it's been some of the learnings that we have learned through the implementation of designation. For example, let me take an example. Sometimes, for example, the water board, in constructing a line, they will give the project to a contractor. The contractors are supposed to control the pumps, the valves, the pipes, the construction services, build the line, get it to operate, and hand it over to a water board. What we've been clear about, even in those instances, is that the responsibility to enforce the local content, because it's still state money, lies with the procuring entity, i.e. the water board itself. Yeah. So it's in the way that they actually have to craft the tender documents, they must ensure that where those areas or where products have been designated, that they enforce those and ensure that their main contractors also do adhere to the local content requirements. But it's a journey that we have, and it's an area of improvement that we have to also keep our eye on. It's not always so easy, because the transition advisors, the contractors, sometimes feel like the local content requirements is not supposed to apply because they are a private company. But for us, the starting point is that if the money is coming from the state tax, the local content must apply in a manner that has been anticipated in the law. And in some of the work that the SEPS colleagues are also verifying, is also work that has been undertaken by the contractors. It's not always a direct purchase between the bidder and the state itself. I think, Sabon, do you want to add a couple of
things? Thanks, Chair. In fact, that's the following particular order.
Can you bring the mic first?
Oh, okay. Just to give a background around the issue raised on the WTO. So South Africa is the signatory to the WTO, but there is another agreement at the WTO called Government Procurement Agreement. It's not a multilateral agreement, it's a voluntary agreement. So we are not signatory as South Africa to the Government Procurement Agreement, which is the GPA. And that's the reason why we can apply local content, because if we are a signatory to the GPA, you can't apply, you must make your procurement system to be overly competitive. So you can't put preference on around the BBBE and local content. So we are not signatory to that. But even though we are not signatory to that, there are other conditions within the WTO. We cannot force the private sector, therefore, to buy. That is again the trade-related investment measures at the WTO, and that's the reason why we have agreed at MedLab, we have the social accord to government, business, and labor that we will buy local. As government, we have moved ahead to pass this legislation, forcing government entities to buy local. So, broadly, the issue of local content is also an instrument of foreign direct investment. So we are saying to foreign companies, come to South Africa and manufacture in this country. And that's the condition for foreign companies to participate in tenders that are designated for local production. It can be from anywhere in the world. Provide the condition is that they must manufacture within the borders of South Africa. So we don't look at the ownership and the jurisdiction. And that is why you find in the rail space, there is Alstom, there is General Electric, and there are Chinese companies the condition is that they must manufacture here, and local content is applied on the product. Then my understanding around the issue raised by Member Calvert around the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement is that the agreements around public procurement have been shelved for now. So public procurement is still coming. So there are no decisions as to how to then apply issues of local content and the verification. But other areas around the movement of digital services, the rules of origin, there is nothing done in that area, and I think other colleagues can add. The role of Healthy South Africa, in the past the committee, I know that the PFA has been invited to come and present. Me and Jody, we happen to be board members there, but I'm not empowered to speak on behalf of the PSA now. But there is work being done across provinces on the public sector procurement forum, where the DTI is being invited to come and present. Later this month, there will be a bi-local summit where government departments, business and industry associations will be given an opportunity to present on what is being done. Then going back on the issue of subcontracting raised by Member Yako, the rules are clear when it comes to local content. So whether it's designation, local content is the first stage of evaluation. So if you departments happen to be procuring for furniture, so what will happen is that local content must be evaluated first, right, to check if the thresholds have been met. So that is the first step. And there are no points allocated in this. Then the second stage, we deal with price and the PPE. Now the 2017 regulations are very clear around the issue of subcontracting. So it can be done through, is it regulation, is it 4? Regulation 4, you can pre-qualify certain tenders to support black women youth and disabled. But it must be clear in the address that this is the pre-qualification to deal with subcontracting. But there's also regulation 9 dealing with compulsory subcontracting, where it is feasible to subcontract. Right, so it's clear that for expenditure above 30 million, so there is compulsory subcontracting. So it could deal with it. So if you happen to buy furniture or any other product above 30 million, so you have compulsory subcontracting. So the understanding is then that the product must be manufactured in South Africa and then deal with subcontracting. The rules are here around that matter. Tanya spoke on the public sector, the private sector incentives, and I think the work on the master plan, sectoral master plan that we are developing, is to then come up with commitment on how to support local manufacturers. Not only master plans, so if we have been reading the news or following the takeover by DIPSCO, you see that there are public interest commitments there for PepsiCo to continue buying from local manufacturers as well as enterprise suppliers. You know. So there is competition element as well linked to that. So I know that in terms of our financial incentives, there are discussions to say how do we then come up with conditions as well on local content in some of the projects that we are supporting, because that is work that is being ongoing. Member Mantashe, the issue of results around the implementation of local content, the results are uneven. You know. there are sectors where we are doing very well, but similarly, there are sectors where we have serious challenges. And the challenges are not necessarily local content challenges. It's corruption in the public procurement system. So we find ourselves, you know, even yesterday my colleagues were with the Hawk, you know, submitting affidavits and so forth, because we must then say what is the DTI do to facilitate some of the trouble, which we don't know about because we are not involved in the evaluation. So where we have challenges, it's mostly, you know, clearly, to be honest, it's corruption. And that is linked to when I'm answering the question, what kind of support do we want from the members? You know, it's to tighten up the legislation. Even if when you read Regulation 14, it assumes that it's not government that is will be in the wrong. It assumes that it's the bidder who will participate in non-compliance. Doesn't assume that there are certain instances where organs of state themselves facilitate such corruption. So we must tighten up the remedies. And also institutional alignment, because even the DTI and the National Treasury on their own, they're not big enough to deal with the scale, because public procurement is devolved in the country. There are many institutions. So you need law enforcement officers, competition authorities, policy-making institutions. So the bill does allude, the procurement bill, it also creates opportunities for the arbitrator to, as a method of dispute resolution, you know, because the procurement cases are dropping the court board, so we want to resolve those disputes so that it don't affect service delivery. But this section on remedies, it must be expanded, and we make the rules robust enough so that they are consequences. If it means that some people will have to be dealt with through the criminal legal system, then the rules must be clear on that. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Chief. Chief, just on the SAB's turnaround strategy, both Dr. Mane and I have been part of the team to look at the SAB's turnaround strategy, and we are implementing that. What we've done in the past month is to identify one or two areas that we want to try and fast track, and ICT has been one of those. So we've the whole focus around the certification area, we've got an internal project called C4, and we're looking at a system. So what we've also done to supplement our ICT capacity is ask CIPC for their CIO to come and assist us. He's been assisting us, he's had a look at the system, and the general consensus is that we've recently bought the system and we just have to look at expanding that and rolling that out to assist the certification area, because right now I think the committee's concern is correct that it is a manual system, but there are processes in place within the next 6 to 8 weeks watching to hopefully conclude the process and start the process of migrating into the system. I think the point that Tandy has made, Chair, honourable members, about the funding and about ring-fencing the local content budget has certainly assisted. Prior, we've been doing the function since 2012. There hadn't been certainty in terms of allocating specific budget to it. That certainty has now been provided for. And what we've done to supplement our capacity is to bring in partnerships. So I think currently, and Katima can come in, I think there's about 10 companies that we work with who can assist us to bolster our capacity while we building that internally. Chair, the I think the other point that I also just wanted to indicate is that there is a very strong focus on reviewing of IT, and those decisions I think we'll be making in the next 6 to 8 weeks to try and finalise that. And then, Chief, just on the last point, I think one of the honourable members asked the question about Proud Asia, and I think Dr. Mukuba has alluded to that. They do have an awareness program, and perhaps what we could suggest is that they share that awareness program with the committee. They also do mall activations depending on the nature or the season. We are also partnering with them on a buy local campaign as the DPI in preparation for the Expo 2020, because we're wanting a very strong focus on that. So I think the CEO has shared some of those plans with the DPI team, but certainly I think the committee could request that the activation and their marketing awareness plan. So maybe let me hand over to my colleague. You can just come in. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Just to add on the capacity concerns around the CBS, Chair, I should say that this is not a defense stand per se, but just to apply the situation as it stands. I think just to give a bit of context in the execution of the verification, the way we execute them, the verifications are in twofold, the two-prong approach, where there is the financial part and the technical part. Often what Ms. Scholz referring to of companies we onboarded as part of capacity building is predominantly on the financial side of the verification that we execute. It's cost accounting. So the technical component is more on the capability of the manufacturer to say, indeed, if a verification is related to cables, does a particular company have capacity to manufacture cable? So a person who is not queued up with the cable environment will not be able to assess and ascertain the capability. And that varies insofar as the designation is concerned for different products. So to what Ms. Pesher was referring to is when we carry out these audits, we have a number of auditors for certain competencies within the SABS pool, be it in the chemical space, be it in the electrical space, and so on and so on. So as and when we execute a verification, we will then draw resources from the auditor pool to support the verification. That's the technical component of it. So, and then, of course, we have a few financial officials in-house who are part of the system, permanent employees, who will then support some of these verifications. So that's where we are. And we are mindful of the fact that the scope and the demands will be growing and is growing, in particular also with the advent of the mining charter on the horizon, once the demand is going to grow. And the view is very clear that the intention is not to build a big empire within SABS, but some form of a hybrid system will work insofar as bolstering capacity within the SABS. And that will be a measured approach as we evolve in the execution of the verification process. The question on the wheelie bin from the member, from the verifications we have done, thus far we have not verified one, but we've noted the issue, and I think we look at some of the tenders that have been issued, whether there's not one related to wheelie bins, and maybe take it up and ascertain compliance issues. But according to the verifications we have done, there could be tenders that are there, but we have not selected the specific one. So I'm saying we have not conducted a verification in relation to the region. But insofar as some of the steel structure, in particular, some of the verifications we have done, others do comply, others do not meet the threshold. So we have statistics for that. And I should say that from the history that has been given since the establishment of local content since 2012, as I'm trying to say, by the DTI, we have been moving very, very slow from a take-up perspective. There's a number of challenges we are coming across, and not everyone is comfortable with the execution of the verification, even if they've won the tender. it's a mission to pull out records from some of the companies. There are many stories, there are many versions, and it really hampers the process of the verification. So we equally also learned a couple of lessons, and improvements are also being considered insofar as informing the procuring entities on time when we have breaches, and also reporting to the department regularly on the updates and progress where we are experiencing challenges. Because we've been chasing different suppliers, some are coming forthright with information, others are not. So even though the tenders were awarded, but to really execute the verification on the ground, it's a serious nightmare. And I thought, Chair, maybe I'll leave it at that from the subsequent. Thank you.
Okay. Just to add on the diligence and the structural step question raised by Member Buyan, whether we have the manufacturers in the country. In actual fact, it is this committee that asked us to designate the lubricants. The issue was raised here that municipalities were giving tenders to bidders who were importing those lubricants, and we needed to do something. So we then undertook a research study and decided to designate. So we do have companies, the dominant one is Impact in the country. Same with structural steel, so you see there that when we started, we didn't include steel, but because of the market changes over time, we added steel and structural steel is 100%. The challenge with steel is that steel is not procured sometimes as a standalone product. It's procured as a functional product or an input into a particular. So, for instance, procuring entities will buy cranes. So cranes will include steel as a component, or bulk handling material that will include steel. So because of the specification, that's where we have the gap. The supplier then will find that the foreign supplier will then supply a functional working crane that will include steel, and that's where we are facing the leakage. So it's an area that we are working on with procuring entities, and their procurement plans will then assist us to manage this area better.
So I think maybe one would want to agree that the dominant factor in terms of how we can understand and be able to give support will be at how in the national departments of government we're doing and what progress we're able to make, and what might be issues when we speak to provincial level. And there's also municipalities, but I think the big issue, it will be around the education and awareness program. Because if you go to other levels, I'm not sure if our national departments are at the same level of, you know, understanding concept and compliance. Because I would say if we don't actually pick up on a program of education and awareness, we might find that there's level of ignorance that doesn't actually help us, because the purpose of why we're looking at the issues of local production and content, we think there is going to be, obviously I think factually, a level of stimulation of local industrial development. Obviously issues relating to skills development and employment creation will be what motivates us to try and make sure that there's implementation of this approach. But particularly, we would say between the DTI and Treasury, we will encourage that there's much better and more active relationship between the two departments, because we think it will bring a lot of value. Yeah. So can we actually try and conclude, and I think there are actually members who are much organized than us. I thought that we'll take a 15-minute break, but I see Montache raising a hand. I see Treasury raising a hand as well. So can I take a short comment from yourself, Montache, and then try and actually round up Treasury, and then DDG will actually try and close up.
Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. Chair, I think as a committee, we can't keep quiet and not highlight that an attempt to amend the legislation to close the gap that we are seeing is as urgent as if it was done yesterday with the HEPI. But Chair, I also want to pose some questions. You know, when a presentation is done, it breaks your thinking. That in the last term, we were on an oversight to the black industries that were built as the DTI, and discovered that South African public entities do not give those people, they don't buy from them. They don't procure the stuff that they develop, but rather they order from the international companies. Has that been corrected? If yes, what change has that brought to the local content in the procurement of state-owned companies that we say this as preferential procurement is directed to? The last one, Chair, is to Dodi. I've just learned that this entity that we think the economy of the country depends on, mostly the FABS, does not have a CEO. We learned that Dr. Strachan resigned. When can we expect a CEO to be appointed in that entity? Because it is to have someone who's going to account to us. How soon can we expect a CEO to be appointed in that institution?
Yeah. Okay, can we then go Treasury, DTI, rounding up? Floor is yours. Will you come? Maybe you have got to do that. More from Champana. Maybe you have to go back. I'm going to be wrong for me then.
I was
there. Okay. All right. I don't know if you got Mbuyane is actually suggesting that there might be a question not answered.
No, let me just couple on it because it's part of the...
Yeah, but I'm not too sure because I'm just thinking, I don't know what you want to say.
Okay.
Yeah, so that even if they responded when you're not here, then at least they can repeat for you.
Yeah, no, I didn't do anything.
Okay.
Thank you. Chairperson, mine with the working relationship between the National Treasury, all the stakeholders that are here, SABS, do they have a memorandum of understanding? If yes, can we have these cases in terms of consequence management that have already dealt with? And also the yellow plant equipment. It's a steel as well, so I just want to check where are they buying this greater government from province, local, they've got yellow plants. So do they buy from local or what? So I want to check that. Those are important issues, Chair. That is why we're here as parliamentarians.
I agree with you, Koji. Very important. Treasurer? Yes, Treasurer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I think the issue about the yellow plant and so on, I'll leave to the DTI because it hasn't been designated as yet, so, but it is in process, I understand. I think what I just wanted to comment on was the fact that largely from our perspective, I think we've gone a long way, and I'm hoping my colleagues from the DTI will agree, but I think we've gone a long way in terms of working together prior to the designation. I think that the challenge is probably then around the post-awards years, the consequences and so on. I think from our perspective, in terms, as I alluded to in the presentation, in terms of our role as National Treasury, we are a policy-making institution. However, we do recognize that where there is a monitoring or review of compliance, insofar as the broader procurement takes place, we do play a role, but we don't have a specific focus as yet just on, you know, specifically looking at local content. And maybe because in the emphasis, even in the documents, has always been that all of that must go to the DTI. But having said that, I think a question was asked, what can you as a committee do and how can you assist? And I think Dr. Mukube has spoken largely to that, but I just want to say from a sort of practical perspective, and I think it was also the question asked, how far is the goal? So the goal, to reiterate, has been published in the Gazette on the 19th of February, and it's lying open for until the 31st of March, basically, for public comment. And it's, although saying public comment, it means comment from everybody, so including organs of state, including even the committee. So I would implore you, if you don't have a copy, we can always even send the link to the secretariat for ease of reference, you know, for the committee, and so that you can then have access to it. Then there will be a concerted effort to then consider all of those comments, because remember, it's a law of general application. So if we get challenged later on, we need to be able to prove that whatever is in the bill is actually as a result of input from the public at large. So that is the one thing. But what I did want to also say, in our engagement, it must be said that from a policy perspective, it's quite comprehensive, and I think Dr. Mukube has also spoken to that, in that it provides for even the subcontracting issue. In 12.2, it says where there is a local content provision and there are subcontractors, the subcontracting must not take place in such a way that the local content requirements are prejudiced and compromised. And that is even then reiterated even in the circular level issue. So from a policy perspective, but the challenge then is the implementation. And I think largely, even in terms of the remedies, where there's a bit of a gap is that it doesn't talk to the organs of state. And it's the organs of state that also, to a large extent, sometimes maybe don't have too much of an appetite to comply because they talk about ease of implementation and also there's a feeling that because of local content requirements, this are sometimes four times as much as they would cost. And what we, in our engagement with them, say for example in the construction space, when you're looking at a bill of quantities, some of the things that they need to start thinking outside of the box is maybe take out those local content requirements and procure them separately so that they don't form part of the larger bill of quantities and inflate the prices. You know, so we're trying to have those engagements, but we will also continue to engage with the DTI to maybe look at, because we've also had a call quite often about, is there not some kind of list or something that they know where can be procured, who is manufacturing locally, because they're saying that sometimes the institutions don't know where to procure from. So we want to sort of say, okay, whilst the policy is there, but what can we do to also help ease the implementation? You know, so these are some of the things that we are looking at. But I don't want to belabor the point. I think a lot of it was covered previously. I just wanted to give a feedback specifically around the bill in terms of how far it is. So we have until the 31st of May to make those comments, and I can send a link to the secretary for ease of
question. Is it gone through Treasury, and there is actually contribution across? And I think maybe the point will just say, does it sufficiently cover the areas we see as gaps? Because unless maybe there's another process to actually come through over and above the amendment of the legislation. I'm just checking, because you might find that there might be more than one process. Is it through only Treasury and then everyone contributes, then you're comfortable with the kind of amendment in terms of the process we're engaging on?
Okay, so the process usually is that firstly there's a need that's identified, that the legislation is fragmented, it's not talking meaningfully even to issues of preferential procurement and redressing of imbalances of the cost and so on. So the process that was followed to get to this point, there were initial consultations with various stakeholder groups, but now it's at a point where it's not ready for promulgation. It's at a point where it's saying, okay, given all the input that we've received, this is what we're looking at in terms of addressing some of the challenges. But also, I think, because it's quite an iterative process, but it's now gotten to the point where it comes through cabinet for approval to then be published, and that publication has happened. But it's still going forward, it's still a process, because depending on the comments that are received, there might still need to be some additional input or changes there. So that's why it's at a critical stage now for everybody to make sure that they've read it and can give that input.
Okay. Any further contributions? And then once you're done, because I want us to actually close up, TDG. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, there's actually.
Well, thank you, Chair. Just on the cancellation, whether there are some material irregularities, correctional organizations have picked up that there are some misrepresentations when it comes to the local content. That responsibility is delegated to the accounting officer. Treasury can advise. Only if perhaps the accounting officer is not certain what needs to be done when they pick up such issues with regards to a specific case. I mean, talking about the case. And also, where necessary, if for instance the whole deed has been published for the second time and maybe those material issues are around local content or any other legislative aspect, then National Treasury has got the right to cancel that particular bit. But when it comes to a contracting stage or when the contract is ongoing and those misrepresentations have been put up, we did speak about restrictions, because that particular department must engage with that particular supplier and then should write to Treasury after engagement, like my colleague was talking about the other department rules, to say to what has happened within our organization or our institution. We request that this particular supplier be restricted, and restriction does deter suppliers to continue to do fraudulent issues with regards to procurement. Yes, I think there are about issues about cancellation, about whose responsibilities is, and about what National Treasury does. So we do work hand in hand with all institutions, including the DCI. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
So, Chair, I just wanted to add on that. The AG, I think it would be remiss of us to forget the role that the AG plays. And I must say, because institutions are quite scared of irregular expenditure, the one thing that does serve to be, you know, you get the carrot and you get the stick, but I think the moment they have an issue where AG has determined that there's non-compliance with local content, please put and subsequent irregular expenditure, that's when you find then the institutions are really scrambling to make that right, and immediately you see changes the next, you know, the following time. So I think the AG does play an important role at the moment in terms of that.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to respond to the recruitment process for the CEO at the Bureau of Standards. We've had a meeting with DG. Minister has issued us with an instruction to fast-track that process. So we are in the process of appointing a service provider to conduct the recruitment for us, Chair.
Okay. Can I get a DDG? Okay. Can I take your doc? And then DDG, can you enter the roundup?
Yeah. Two questions, Chair. On the black industrialist and yellow metal equipment. So the black industrialist problem is a problem of this government, obviously, to include black people in the productive sectors of the economy. So we do have quite a number of black industrialists participating in manufacturing of products designated for local production. So the same issue I've raised last time, the placement of order is a challenge. So the time it takes by Arkansas State to adjudicate the tenders and place the order, it negatively affects the companies, including the black industrialists. And remember, some of them, they have the cost of production is still high. So if the orders are not coming, it affects. But we did come here and raise, I think it was in the red space. So the committee did perform some oversight around that. My view is that that issue, that particular issue has been resolved for now. But we have this serious problem around the tender adjudication and the placement of orders, which we must, you know, find a way of resolving. The yellow metal equipment, yes, we are working on it. There are plans to designate yellow metal equipment, and we are engaging the National Treasurer on it. But lastly, members, so designation is one process. The challenge with yellow metal equipment is that most municipalities have outsourced the function to create the maybe the roads or to maintain and whatever. So they are buying a service, which then they are not necessarily directly buying the yellow metal equipment. So the volumes are not big enough, and that's the first engagement with the National Treasurer. They've raised the issue of the impact, that if the volumes are not big enough, will designation as an instrument assist in protecting and developing the industry? So these are the issues that we are considering in designation. So moving forward, you'll have the instruction note or the second, but the impact is a different issue.
I think she is a well done enough. I think we'd like to indicate to the committee that we have achieved a whole lot of progress around the legislation. One, the time that is taking us to actually develop the research work to issue the instruction note in our partnership with National Treasury, that has been shortened tremendously. Secondly, the adherence of local quantities requirements, at least in the advertisement of the tender, which is the point that they were made earlier on. We have made a lot of progress with a number of procuring entities to ensure that at least the tenders are adhering to the local content requirements. There's still a lot of improvements to be made around the poster watch, i.e. ramping up also our verification process. Secondly, the reporting from the procuring entity's perspective in terms of providing documentation on the bidders that have been awarded, the NXTCs, because that is the basis on which we do the verification. So there's still a whole lot of improvements and progress that we still can do around that. On the question around what can the committee assist to take this work going forward and ensure that we are achieving the industrial development objectives, i.e. creation of industrial capacity, capabilities and jobs locally. One of the areas that we need to get right through the legislative amendment, strengthening the consequence management. Because over time, I think when people know that if we do the wrong thing, there are consequences, we will get a whole lot of change, both from the bidder's perspective and also from the procuring entity's perspective. Currently, the way that the remedies are written, as Dr. Makube and my colleague from National was indicating, that the impression is being given as if the wrongdoing is on the bidder's side. We've seen in areas where there's been a whole lot of corruption and covered, it's been mainly on the procuring entity side. So consequence management and remedies in the legislation going forward will take us a bit further. From an operational perspective, I think the issues around how the right method of doing the verification and also the funding to carry the right quantum of verifications going forward. Currently, we have managed to shift things around in the DTI to make a little bit of budget available to set. But in order for us to create a competent expertise around the verification, we need to have a long-term model around the verification process. And I think those are the issues that we really have to keep our eye on and ensure that the legislation addresses this. As they were indicated earlier on, in the current provisions,
it's really unclear who must carry the cost of the verification. So we have done it with a little bit of assistance from the DTI, but I think it requires a bigger discussion and to be embedded also into the legislation. So we provide clarity to the market. Is it the bidder? Is it the state that is going to carry the cost? And what is the process of actually doing that? So we are very happy with some of the interventions that we have made to get to the point that we are. We have also, even in the process, elevated the work that is done by Proudly SA. Proudly SA was an entity on the side. With the work that we have been doing around enforcement of the designation, I think the work that they are doing is getting traction, is getting noticed, both in the government entities. But I think at the point that the honourable members were saying, how do we ensure that even the entity itself is visible to the public? Because we can only get it right when we start collectively embracing the national effort of buying local. We start with us as an individual, it goes to the entities, it goes into the companies. So I think we need to have a meaningful discussion and progress on how we are embedding the buy local campaign as a society to ensure that we are achieving the national objectives on the designation. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I did actually notice Yako Mulder. You didn't actually do the refreshment. You actually slow. I was just trying checking if I was doing that. Can I actually then take 10 minutes and then actually ask that we take some refreshments, and then after 10 minutes we'll take the ITEC presentation? Thank you very much. We're concluding on this one. Okay.
Yeah, I said, no, we are cool.